Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
Kenyatta attorneys ask for a drop in charges against him. The first U.S. Ebola patient dies in Dallas. I'm Dave DeForest reporting from Washington. Lawyers for Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta are asking the International Criminal Court to drop charges against him. ICC prosecutors say they do not have enough evidence to try Mr. Kenyatta, who is accused of helping to organize post-election violence in 2008. Yes. Mr. Kenyatta spoke to supporters as he left court today. He indicated he is in control of his situation. His attorney told the court at The Hague that his client should be acquitted. Prosecutors say the Kenyan government is blocking efforts to obtain key documents, including Mr. Kenyatta's phone and financial records. Elizabeth Evanson, who is from the group Human Rights Watch, says today's proceedings may not be good for the advance of civil rights in Kenya.
Well, certainly, if the case is unable to go forward, and it seems like everyone agrees that for now it can't go forward to trial as it stands, I mean, I think that that does would have the effect of setting back efforts to end a culture of impunity in Kenya.
More than 1,100 people were killed in the violence in 2008 in Kenya. The first Ebola patient diagnosed in the United States, Thomas Eric Duncan, has died at a Dallas, Texas hospital. Duncan, a Liberian national, was visiting his family in Dallas when he became sick. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control says it is tracking 48 people who have had contact or may have had contact with Duncan in the days before he was admitted to the hospital. Meanwhile, media reports say the United States will place agents at airports and other entry points to check travelers for signs of Ebola. This is VOA News. The Reuters news agency reports that Libya will get help from Egypt in training its soldiers to fight terrorism and protect its border. The prime ministers of the two countries announced today in Cairo an agreement that would step up their cooperation in battling Islamist insurgents. Libyan Prime Minister Abdullah Al-Thani said the two nations need to work together to counter the militants controlling large parts of his country. From South Africa, the Reuters news agency reports that a witness in a notorious murder case testified in court today that British businessman Shireen Diwani offered to pay him to kill Diwani's wife, Annie. Ms. Wama Doda Kiwabe, one of the three men already serving a prison sentence for murdering the woman, told the court that a taxi driver had recruited him for the job. He said he was told to make the killing look like a hijacking. Diwani denies charges that he conspired to kill his wife, who was killed while the couple was on their honeymoon in South Africa. In a case that has received criticism from media rights groups, Ethiopia has sentenced the owners of three magazines to 3 years in prison. According to the AFP News Service, a government spokesman announced the sentences today. The three owners are out of the country and were sentenced in absentia. They're accused of inciting violent revolts, printing and distributing unfounded rumors, and conspiring to unlawfully abolish the constitutional system of the country. The AFP service says Mali is requesting that the United Nations send a rapid reaction force to turn back attacks on UN peacekeepers in the north of the country. Recent attacks have left 31 people dead. Also from the AFP News Service, Nigeria today accused the South African government of blocking a recent purchase from a South African arms company. Nigeria threatened to retaliate against South African companies if the issue is not resolved. Nigerian lawmakers last month agreed to borrow money to fund the fight against Boko Haram extremists. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says the strategy for the coalition battling Islamic State militants in Syria and Iraq is still evolving. He said decisions about the role of Turkey and other countries will be coming in hours or days. At least 12 people died in Turkey in fighting between police and pro-Kurdish protesters. The protesters want the government there to help Kurds in neighboring Syria. There have been more civilians killed in cross-border fighting between India and Pakistan in the disputed region of Kashmir. Indian officials say at least two civilians were killed and 18 wounded Tuesday night in gunfire and mortar exchanges. Pakistani media report three deaths. Nine people were killed Monday, marking the highest civilian death toll in that conflict in more than a decade. I'm Dave DeForest in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
They have been repeatedly raped. They have been set alight. They have lost their small businesses in Naivasha and Nakuru. Is it really fair to force them now to pay the price for obstruction of justice by Mr. Kenyatta's government?
That's Fergal Gaynor, a lawyer for the victims of Kenya's violence. Uhuru Kenyatta became the first sitting president to appear before the International Criminal Court in The Hague today. We'll have full details coming up. Also, four West African countries plan to accelerate their war with Islamist radical group Boko Haram. The first Ebola patient diagnosed in the U.S. has died in a Dallas, Texas hospital, while thousands of health workers in Liberia are threatening to start striking on Monday. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, Kenya's Uhuru Kenyatta became the first sitting president to appear before the International Criminal Court in The Hague today. The Kenyan leader attended a key hearing that may determine whether the Crimes Against Humanity case against him is dropped or postponed indefinitely. Lisa Bryant reports from Paris. The judges are expected to make a decision on the case by the year's end.
President Uhuru Kenyatta was greeted by cheering supporters outside the courtroom, but he remained silent during the three-hour hearing at the International Criminal Court. Instead, his defense lawyer, Stephen Kay, made a vigorous argument the Kenyan leader be acquitted of the charges against him.
He is entitled to his verdict of not guilty because there are no further inquiries going on. It is plainly not the case that was brought against him that can be sustained at all. And so when I say there is no evidence, I say deliberately there is no evidence, because if there was evidence, we would have a trial.
Mr. Kenyatta faces five counts at the Hague-based court for his alleged role in overseeing post-election violence in Kenya between 2007 and 2008. The unrest killed about 1,100 people and displaced more than 500,000 others. Mr. Kenyatta says he is innocent. His presence Wednesday at the ICC wraps up a two-day status hearing to determine how or whether to proceed with his trial. The defense says the prosecution's case against Mr. Kenyatta has collapsed. But prosecutors argue the Kenyan government has obstructed their efforts to gather evidence to build their case, including Mr. Kenyatta's phone, tax, and banking records. Prosecution lawyer Benjamin Gumpert has called for an indefinite postponement of the case, arguing that scrapping it altogether would set a worrying precedent.
And it would not be in the interests of justice for the court to make a ruling which will effectively be interpreted as the court saying, if a country sticks out for long enough, obstructing proper inquiries being made by the prosecutor, then the case against the person that country wants to protect will go away. And that would be a disastrous interpretation.
The lawyer for the victims of Kenya's violence, Fergal Gaynor, said if the case collapses, the victims will be the biggest losers.
They have lost mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters. They have been repeatedly raped. They have been set alight. They have lost their small businesses in Naivasha and Nakuru. Is it really fair to force them now to pay the price for obstruction of justice by Mr. Kenyatta's government?
Kenya's Attorney General, Getu Migai, has said the government has done its best to produce material requested by the prosecution, but some of the demands were impossible to meet. The Kenyatta case is seen as a major test for the ICC, which has secured only two convictions since it began operating in 2002. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Coming up on 10 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Well, soldiers in Cameroon have killed eight suspected members of the Nigerian militant group Boko Haram, who disguised themselves as Nigerian refugees and crossed the border. A number of actual refugees were also killed in yesterday's confrontation. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaounde.
Haman Dandama, a resident of the Cameroonian border village of Amchide, told VOA that violent shooting erupted when suspected Boko Haram members attacked a Cameroonian military jeep that was on regular patrol in a local refugee camp.
C'est pas seulement les gens qui avaient des armes qui sont.
He says Nigerian refugees, members of Boko Haram and Cameroonians were killed in the confrontation. Dandama said at least 8 bodies of the assailants were buried in a nearby deserted area, but the government of Cameroon has not confirmed that. Mijiyawa Bakari, governor of Cameroon's far north region, blamed Boko Haram for the attack. He says calm returned after the government deployed troops to the area.
The situation is under control since the head of state sent several soldiers and many weapons in the front. Everybody is doing his job. There's no major problem to underline.
Colonel Dide Bajek, spokesperson for Cameroon's military, says Nigerian refugees are safe, but adds they should be watchful because Cameroon is fighting an unknown enemy.
Depuis que cette guerre a commencé, celle de l'insécurité, qui en est à sa plus haute intensité.
He says since the war against Boko Haram was declared, there has been mounting insecurity along Cameroon's border with Nigeria, but that the Nigerian militant group will never overpower the Cameroon army. He adds that they will continue taking care of Nigerian refugees, but that they will henceforth be more vigilant. Boko Haram took control of the Nigerian town of Banki several weeks ago, and the militants have tried to make incursions across the border into Amchide. Cameroon's military has been deployed to the border to fight off the militants. There are currently more than 40,000 Nigerian refugees in Cameroon, driven across the border by the violence in northeastern Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Four West African countries plan to accelerate their war with Islamist radical group Boko Haram through joint command of a new multinational force. Yesterday, four heads of state and a representative of the president of Cameroon met in Niger's capital, Niamey. They announced that multinational effort will open command headquarters November 1st. Other countries in the talks were Chad, Benin, and Nigeria. In the past 5 years, Boko Haram rebels have devastated Nigeria's northwest states in an effort to create a religious caliphate. The violence has recently spilled over into Cameroon. In nearby Mali, the UN mission reports that another Islamist terrorist group killed a UN peacekeeper yesterday in a rocket attack on the border town of Kidal. And last Friday, 9 peacekeepers were killed in an ambush. The first Ebola patient diagnosed in the United States has died in a Dallas, Texas hospital. Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital says Thomas Eric Duncan died today at 7:51 a.m. local time. Duncan, a Liberian national, was visiting family in Dallas when he became sick and entered the hospital on September 28th. He initially went to the facility 3 days earlier, complaining of fever and abdominal pain, but was sent home with antibiotics. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control said yesterday it is tracking 48 people who had contact or may have had contact with Duncan in the days before he was admitted to the hospital. Meanwhile, media reports say the United States will place agents at airports and other entry points to check travelers for signs of Ebola. In Sierra Leone, where the government is negotiating with striking health workers, local television is reporting that workers have refused to bury bodies lying in the streets of Freetown. A U.S. NGO, Samaritan's Purse, announced today an effort to control the spread of the virus in remote communities in Liberia. The charity is sending home health care kits to towns and villages in River Gee County to try to contain the virus. The kits include protective gear, medicine, hydration kits, disinfectants, sprayers, and the staff to train in the use of the kits. The World Health Organization has reported more than 3,400 deaths from Ebola in 5 West African countries. And in Liberia, thousands of health workers are threatening to strike starting on Monday. VOA's Ann Look has more with reporting by Prince Collins in Monrovia.
The Liberia Health Workers Association says it is calling on its approximately 15,000 members not to go to work starting Monday, October 13th. The union Secretary General George Williams says they want hazard pay, benefits, and safe working conditions.
What we take home is insufficient for the kind of risks and kind of jobs we do. That would have to our government from time immemorial. Nobody seems to listen to this.
The union is demanding monthly salaries ranging from $500 to $1,500, depending on the jobs being performed in Ebola treatment units. The government says it can't pay that much. Medical staff caring for sick people are at high risk for Ebola, which is transmitted via close contact with infected bodily fluids. The World Health Organization says at least 348 health workers have gotten Ebola during this regional outbreak, and at least 186 of them have died. Half of those cases have been in Liberia. Many health centers in Liberia shut down in August and remain closed. The union says the government still hasn't provided the necessary personal protective gear. Both governments and international NGOs in Liberia and Sierra Leone rely heavily on locals to staff existing Ebola treatment units and to bury the highly contagious bodies of Ebola victims. A protracted health worker strike in Liberia could impede efforts to open new treatment units to meet the rapidly growing demand. Experts say the caseload is doubling about every month. The WHO representative to Liberia, Dr. Peter Graff, called on the union to hold off on the go-slow, as the strike is called locally.
This is not the moment to compromise all you have achieved and all your dedication by going slow. Going slow means that the quality of the services is compromised. Going slow means that those who still want to work and want to work hard have to work perhaps too hard, and they will put themselves at risk. And going slow means putting the lives of those you care for unnecessarily at risk.
He said the union's grievances are, quote, a legitimate issue for discussion, and said the government is working on a solution. Anne Luck, VOA News, Dakar.
Thank you, Anne. Also, Liberia's ambassador to the United States, Jeremiah Solente, tells VOA that his country needs more support in the fight against Ebola. This echoes President Barack Obama's opinion expressed earlier this week. He criticized foreign governments for not acting as aggressively as they need to against the outbreak. Reporter Mariama Diallo spoke with him about his view on the crisis.
We appreciate what has been committed so far. The UN, the WHO, the United States government, President Obama coming out strong to encourage other world leaders to join this fight is just commendable. We need more support than we have gotten so far. So President Obama is right. The world can no longer wait. As you wait, as you go through the bureaucracy, as you involve the red tape, a lot of people are dying. I tell people that the Ebola virus is not a conventional warfare, that you can have peace conferences, you can go to meetings and sit to discuss. The more you wait, the more people are being infected, and it could become a global issue rather than a regional issue.
You touched on the work that some organizations have been doing, and there's the WHO, the United States have sent troops down there, the European Commission, the World Bank has spent almost like $400 million. What do you need, like, immediately?
Liberia comes out of 14 years of war where the infrastructure is broken, the roads, the health care system, educational system, all of these things were affected, and the country was just picking up with relative peace and stability, trying to build those infrastructure. Now with the Ebola hit, we lack the basic necessities to be able to deal with that. In terms of transporting affected people from the different communities, the containment center. In fact, we need more containment centers. We need more beds. We need ambulances to take people from the communities to the treatment centers. We need to train more contact tracing agents. We need to train more community health workers. Part of the reason why the Ebola is spreading so fast in Liberia is due to the lack of ambulances. And so when affected people ride a public transportation or ride a taxi or the bus, and a group of people unknowingly riding taxi to get infected. So that is part of the reason why this thing is so prevalent in the cities. Secondly, the commitment we appreciate, but it's time-bound. If you commit whatever your country or your organization is committing to the Ebola, can we have it now?
I touched on the international community, but I also want to touch on the African community. Do you think that the African states, other countries that are not affected or directly affected by the outbreak, who might eventually be affected, are doing enough to help?
Well, we appreciate the collaborative efforts from our African brothers. Nigeria was one of the first to commit some cash. Gambia came on board, Senegal was very helpful in allowing the airlines to use Senegal as a hub for West Africa when other institutions were thinking on banning flight to the affected countries. So the African countries, the AU had committed some troops to go to Liberia with the support of USA. So the African continent is doing their part, but everyone needs to step a little bit more.
That was Liberia's ambassador to the United States, Jeremiah Solante. He was speaking to VOA's Mariama Diallo. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 680 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Coming up on 22 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Kenya's Uhuru Kenyatta becomes the first sitting president to appear before the International Criminal Court in The Hague. The first Ebola patient diagnosed in the United States has died in a Dallas, Texas hospital, while thousands of health workers in Liberia are threatening to strike starting on Monday. And of course, we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at African News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237. A look at more developments around the continent. The Malawi High Court has delivered judgment on the first person convicted in the 2013 government scandal involving corruption, looting, and the theft of more than $30 million in public funds. Former Principal Secretary in the Ministry of Tourism, Triza Namathanka Senzani, pleaded guilty to stealing around $150,000 in the financial scam, which prompted donor partners to withdraw their budgetary support to the country. Lamek Messina has local reaction to the sentence.
Before the verdict was passed, defense lawyer Nekton Mhula pleaded with the court to be lenient with Senzani, whose charges of theft and money laundering have a maximum possible sentence of 10 years in prison. Mhula cited mitigating factors like Senzani's swift plea of guilty, her status as a first offender, and her return of the stolen money. Lilongwe High Court Justice Ivy Kamanga rejected the argument, saying the case had serious repercussions for Malawi. She sentenced Senzani to 9 months imprisonment for theft and 3 years with hard labor for money laundering, with those sentences to run concurrently. State Prosecutor Renick Matemba welcomed the ruling.
We're happy with the ruling. As you'd recall, in our submissions, what we are fighting for was a custody sentence, not a suspended sentence. Yes, she pleaded guilty, and the restitution was made, but when you look at the gravity of the offenses that we charged her, theft and money laundering, they are serious offenses.
Defense lawyer Mhura called the sentence given to his client a miscarriage of justice.
We are obviously disappointed by the ruling. We thought that she would get a non-custodial sentence because, aside from the fact that she's a first-time offender, she has pleaded guilty, she has paid back the money, she has cooperated with the prosecuting authorities. We are considering an appeal.
Others say the three-year sentence given to Senzani is too lenient and will not deter anyone from committing a similar offense. Ernest Tindo is a political science lecturer at the Chancellor College of the University of Malawi.
The punishment is a deterrent. Otherwise, if we have lenient sentences, chances are that we may not be dealing with a problem because people will calculate and conclude that perhaps it is worthwhile taking a risk of being in prison for 3 years and thereafter enjoy millions of dollars that were stolen from government coffers.
Human rights campaigner Bile Banda forced the system of using the courts to handle these corruption cases.
Administration of the
justice should have been done through truth and reconciliation. And although that will be convicted, and although that may voluntarily agreed that they have taken a hand, allowed to pay back, the money that will be recovered will be committed to other essential areas to service the plight of citizens in the country.
Ordinary Malawians are divided about the sentencing.
Mrs. Sezani gave back the money she stole, and there's nothing that the court could have done by giving her 3 years. Is just fine.
What I can say to the sentence of 3 years imprisonment, I think it's not fair. She has been given a softer punishment than what I was expecting as a concerned Malawian.
I think the verdict is fair, considering the fact that the government, as well as the courts, took every penny from Mrs. Sezani's account.
More than 60 suspects, including civil servants, business people, and former government officials, are on trial for various offenses from their arrest last year in what is believed to be the biggest financial scandal in the country's history. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
Reuters World Service says Egypt will train Libyan forces to fight terrorism and help secure a shared border. The prime ministers of the two states made the announcement in Cairo today. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi has expressed concern over Libya-based militants who crossed the border into Egypt. The radicals are working with Sinai-based group Ansar Beit al-Maqdis. It has killed hundreds of security forces supporting the Egyptian president. Last year, former Army Chief al-Sisi ousted the Islamic Brotherhood from 1 year in power. And a transgender activist in Kenya has won a landmark case against state educational authorities in Kenya. Yesterday, the country's high court ordered the National Examinations Council to grant Audrey Mbugua's request to recognize her change of names. The legal victory for Mbugua, the former Andrew Mbugua, is a surprise for socially conservative Kenya. The well-known transgender activist has been nominated to receive the Dutch government's Human Rights Tulip Award for her lobbying in Kenya for transgender rights. 3 months ago, Mbugua won another high court ruling forcing authorities to register the lobbying group, Transgender Education and Advocacy. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. And on behalf of our African News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Advice from the international medical group Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, to help limit the spread of the Ebola virus. First, do not touch or eat the bushmeat of animals from the forest. Avoid contact with blood, urine, feces, vomit, sweat, tears, saliva, mucus, or genital secretions of an Ebola patient. Do not handle the bodies of the patients who have died of Ebola. Inform the nearest health center of any suspected Ebola cases. Seek health care immediately because infected people have a much higher survival rate if they receive early treatment at a health facility compared to staying home. These are recommendations from the medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, on how to prevent the spread of Ebola. On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.